Okay, we'll move this up a little bit, so just in case. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 28, Kapila's instructions on devotional services, text number 9 this
morning. Yes.
Do we do the verse responsibly or?
As you like.
As I like. Pranasya sotayin margam.
Pranasya sotayin margam.
Pura kumbhakare chakai.
Pura kumbhakare chakai.
Pratikulena vachittam.
Pratikulena vachittam.
Yatastiram achanchalam.
Yatastiram achanchalam.
Hare Krishna. Pranasya.
Pranasya.
A vital air.
A vital air.
Shodayet.
Shodayet.
One should clear.
One should clear.
Margam.
Margam.
The passage.
The passage.
Pura kumbhaka rechakai. By inhaling, retaining, and exhaling.
By inhaling, retaining, and exhaling.
Pratikulena. By reversing.
By reversing.
Va.
Or.
Chittam.
Chittam.
Dhamani.
Dhamani.
Yatta.
Yatta.
So that.
So that.
Stiram.
Stiram.
Steady.
Steady.
Achanchalam,
achanchalam,
free from disturbance.
Free from disturbance.
Translation. The yogi should clear the passage of vital air by breathing in the following manner. First, he should inhale very deeply. And then to hold the breath in. And finally, exhale. Or, reversing the process, the yogi can first exhale, then hold the breath outside, and finally inhale. This is done so that the mind may become steady and free from external disturbances. Srila Prabhupada reported, these breathing exercises are performed to control the mind and fix it on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Savaya Mahakrishna Padaravindayo. The devotee, Ambarish Maharaj, fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna 24 hours a day. Obviously not by doing that way. The process of Krishna consciousness is to chant Hare Krishna and to hear the sound attentively so that the mind is fixed upon the transcendental vibration of Krishna's name, which is none different from Krishna, the personality. The real purpose of controlling the mind by the prescribed method of clearing the passage of life air is achieved immediately if one fixes his mind directly on the lotus feet of Krishna. The Hatha Yoga system, or breathing system, is especially recommended for those who are very absorbed in the concept of bodily existence, but who can perform the simple process of chanting Hare Krishna. But one who can perform the simple process of chanting Hare Krishna can fix the mind more easily. Three different activities are recommended for clearing the passage of breath: Puraka, Kumbhaka, and Rechaka. Inhaling the breath is called Puraka. Sustaining it within is called kumbhaka. And finally, exhaling it is called rechaka. These recommended processes can also be performed in the reverse order. After exhaling, one can keep the air outside for some time and then inhale. The nerves through which inhalation and exhalation, the word is actually nadi, uses the word nerve, nadi. The nerves through which inhalation and exhalation are conducted are technically called ida and pingala. The ultimate purpose of clearing the ida and pingala passages is to divert the mind from material enjoyments. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, one's mind is his enemy and one's mind is also his friend. Its position varies according to the different dealings of the living entity. If we divert our mind to thoughts of material enjoyment, then our mind becomes an enemy. And if we concentrate our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, then our mind is a friend. By the yoga system of Puraka, Kumbhaka and Richka, or by directly fixing the mind on the sound vibration of Krishna, or on the form of Krishna, the same purpose is achieved. In Bhagavad Gita 8.8, it is said that one must practice the breathing exercise of Yasa Yoga Yuktena. By virtue of these processes of control, the mind cannot wander to external thoughts, Chetasa Nanyadamana. Thus one can fix his mind constantly on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and can attain Yati, Him. Practicing the yoga system of exercise and breath control is very difficult for a person in this age, and therefore Lord Chaitanya recommends Kirtaniya Sadapri. One should always chant the holy name of the Supreme Lord Krishna, because Krishna is the most suitable name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The name Krishna and the Supreme Person Krishna are none different. Therefore, if one concentrates his mind on hearing and chanting Hare Krishna, the same result is achieved. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samayati Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravarika Charane Vishesha Sudhya Varika Sachacha Deve Sutaya Om Mangyana Timuranda Sukaranjana Shrakaya Chaksur Umiritim Jainam Tasmai Sri Garve Vanshakalpa Kudyachak Vipasindu Veva Shakita Nam Havani Vyo Varishnavi Vyo Om Namaha. So Kapila Dev is instructing on devotional service, but the practice, the philosophy of Sankhya is also associated with yoga practice. Traditionally, they're paired together. Patanjali Yoga Sutra, the Sankhya philosophy. And so here, he's describing this method. Prabhupada calls these people who practice devotional service in this way, in the second canto, mystic bhakti yogis. Their aim is devotional service to Krishna, but they undertake it by the method of Astanga Yoga or some variation on it. In the second canto, it's described how they lead their bodies in this way. That when they want to, there's a posture called Muktasana, or leaving the body, which involves, among other things, raising the life. This is also called Kundalini Yoga, Satchakra Yoga. When one wants to go back to Godhead, gives up the body by sitting in a certain way so that the anus is blocked with the heel and the foot so the air can't get out. Then you raise the life hairs up to the chakras, picking up the soul, going up and up from here to here to here and here to here. And keeping the air within And then finally, there's a little tiny hole up here, Brahmarandra. Go out that way, exit that way. Well, the second canto describes that if your mind is fixed on Krishna, you go back to Godhead. However, if you are in something of the mentality of a tourist and want to see the other higher planetary systems or have some material desires or the yogi power or something, then you have a longer process for getting out. So it's described, actually I think it's in the Chandogya Upanishad, that in the chakra in the heart, there's 101 nadis, these channels by which the prana throw. He calls them nerves here, but the word is nadi. There's one of them called Shishumna, which goes from the heart to the Brahmarandra. And so the yogi who wants to leave his body somehow or other, it says by intelligence, finds out the Shushumna passage and then takes the air with the soul in it up to the Brahmarandra and leaves. The Shumna is also a cosmological feature, interestingly enough. It's also outside. Is it the Milky Way?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if the Milky Way was the Akasha Ganda or Ganda, or maybe it's the same thing. Maybe the same thing, yeah. So anyway, this is the system. And when somebody leaves in this way, the body bursts into flames. And then in the Bhagavatam, several notable people leave in this way. One is Sati, as a protest against her father's human husband. Another one is Prithu Maharaj. When Prithu was ready to leave his body, he went this way. Prabhupada says in a comment on Prithu that actually he didn't practice this kind of devotional service, but previously he had practiced yoga, and so when he wanted to leave his body, he took advantage of it. And left in this way. His body burst from the flame. Sati's body burst from the flame. And of course, Dhritarashtra, under the guidance of Vidura, left in this way. And his body also burst from the flame. Tremendous heat is generated. And in this connection, it should be pointed out that there is still a medical mystery of people dying of spontaneous combustion. if you look it up, actually, in Charles Dickens, I think in the novel, I think it's Bleak House, one of his characters dies of spontaneous combustion. It's quite a scene. It's a really marvelous Dickinson scene with this greasy smoke floating around and stuff. And then the second edition, or the first printed edition, because they were serialized when it came out in the book form, he had a preface in which he defended it. He said so many people had said this is too fantastic. He gave all kinds of instances of people dying from spontaneous combustion. And there are many other instances of this too. There was one woman, I think in Miami, who was, the firemen came, there was a fire, and they came and she'd been sitting at the breakfast table or something, completely burned up, only 1 foot was remaining. The heat was so intense, the silverware melted next to her. And there's no explanation except that there has to be a lot of heat to burn up. Human body's mostly water, liquid anyway. This doesn't suggest that these are yogis, but it may be under some particular circumstances one might leave the body this way. So anyway, that's happening.
Kind of saves a lot of trouble. Funeral
comes. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, people don't cremate in India anymore because all the wood is so expensive. It's a lot. I forgot, I used to know how many pounds of wood it took, something like 500 pounds of wood or something like that to cremate a body. Yeah. Anyway, this is in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as we very clearly discussed the basic principle of yoga. Although in the sixth chapter, Krishna is particularly talking about the Ashtanga yoga system. Nevertheless, the general principles are there and can be applied to Krishna consciousness. And yoga means to concentrate the mind by controlling the senses. And it says in the very beginning that the whole purpose of yoga is to deal with the mind. Although most people now, yoga has become quite fashionable, rarely get beyond the body. Then when you get to the mind, we'll just speak of the soul. I read an article, in a New Yorker, New York Times magazine about people practicing yoga. The main reason they were doing it was for the famous yoga butt. B-U-T-T. Tighten your end or something. That's just one of the benefits of the yoga system. Not even one of the cities, you know, the city is. You really look good in the size they dress or something, I don't know. Or tight pants. So, this is what it's come to in Kali Yuga. For most people practicing yoga, should they get spiritually serious to it, then they have a really hard time because it's enormously difficult. And especially when you come to the point of controlling the mind. Prabhupada said it's meant for people who absorb in the body because you start with a physical discipline. And then you come to the point of trying to control the mind. The mind as the enemy of things. If it's absorbed in material things, it's your enemy. But if it becomes fixed or trained to be fixed on transcendence, then it's your friend. In any case, the mind is the realm of habit, of Pavlovian conditioning. It's just stupid and has to sort of, once it gets programmed in a certain way, it goes. So if you've got habits, you just automatically do them. But in Krishna consciousness, if you have the habits of devotional service, then the mind is your friend. Because you will get up in the morning, come to Mangalarti, or chant rounds, without even thinking about it any more than you have to decide every morning, will I brush my teeth or not? If your mother trained you properly, you have this habit of teeth brushing, and you just do it. So habits are very powerful, either direction. So one has to program the mind, and the faculty that does that is called intelligence, buddhi. Buddhi is not very well understood in the West, because everybody's at best on what's called the mental platform. And rarely come to the higher subtle platform of buddhi. The way I understand buddhi, really, is when we come into the world and we absorb from our culture a certain way of looking at the world. It comes with language, and it comes in very subtle ways. We don't have to be instructed, but we have a certain framework, cognitive framework, a mindset into which everything fits and through which we perceive. We have categories by which we identify things. This is this, this is this, this belongs to this category, that belongs to that category. Without having this, the world is unintelligible. And so the mind is there, even by the time you perceive something, it has been processed. And we just think that's the way things are. But actually, what determines this the whole mindset, this is higher faculty, which is called Vidhi. This is usually translated as discrimination, intelligence. There's really no exact meaning for it. People rarely deal with the platform of buddhi, but they do so in certain conditions. Religious conversion is one of them. Not necessarily religious conversion, but a conversion of world views. You live in one world, you know, you're an ordinary guy making money in the world, and say you meet a rabid Marxist intellectual, and he convinces you, look at this, you know, here's how Marx is going. Do you think the world is like this? This is what's really going on. You know, follow the money, look who profits, see what's going on. If you just understand economics and power relationships, look at this, and then you put on the Marxist glasses, and suddenly the whole world lights up in a different way. You never saw it before. Right? And you suddenly live in almost like a different world. Because and so one world crashes down, and another world replaces it. Religious conversion, similar way. When you're a devotee, for example, you accept the idea, okay, that there's this notion of three modes of material nature, a set of categories. And then you start to look at the world through those categories, and suddenly it lights up in a certain way. It was always there, the three modes. You never noticed them before, because nobody said, see this, see this, see this. So that this kind of thing, the determination of mind shifts, or in science is what Kuhn calls paradigm shifts, scientific revolutions also that happens on the practice of buddhi. This is not a modern idea, although sometimes people say this is, you know, postmodernism is based on an idea like this. But St. Augustine had a theory of knowledge, which was, he called it the primacy of the will in knowledge. That you don't know anything unless you're interested in it. And interest is the beginning of love. So what do you love? What are you interested in? And he's trying to explain why some people don't know God. Which to him is the most obvious of facts. But to other people, they don't see him at all. And because they're not interested. So he called this the idea that what he called the will, I think what he called buddhi and knowledge. So this buddhi is there. And in the Bhagavad Gita, almost synonymous with devotional service is the term buddhi yoga, because it's about. Prabhupada calls the Bhagavad Gita the culture of intelligence. He says because of the civilization of intelligence. He says there's four levels of civilization of culture. The culture of the mind, the culture of the body, culture of the mind, culture of intelligence, and culture of the soul. So he says that the culture of the body, we see all around us in health spas and restaurants and places for taking care of the body. Beauty parlors, dermatologists, whatever, it's all for the body. Then the mind, we have the colleges and universities where people entertain various ideas on the mental platform, fool around with them for some time, get tired of them, put them aside, and pick out new mental toys to play with. In academics, the most powerful argument against any position is we don't do that here. Or it's not done anymore. Are you still in the bat? It's like we're wearing last year's fashion.
We've been there.
So this is that's the culture of the mind. The culture of intelligence, Prabhupada says, is Bhagavad Gita. Because if the intelligence is cultivated properly, you will also start to see that, that actually, as he says in the Bhagavatam, that the super soul is that intelligence is the form in which the super soul gives us direction. And that actually, by cultivating intelligence and purifying intelligence and getting in proper worker order, you will be able to receive the directions of Paramatma, the super soul, which is that Paramatma is the goal of yoga. But that's Bhagavad Gita is the culture of intelligence. When that intelligence is perfectly formed, you surrender to Krishna. Then finally, the culture of the soul is Bhagavatam. So those are the four levels of this. So that by process of bhakti yoga, the mind is fixed upon Krishna. In Krishna's talking about this to Arjuna in the sixth chapter. He says that wherever the mind wanders, you bring it back under the control of the self. The wanders again, you bring it back. He said because one's intention should be fixed upon the Supreme so steadily, it's like a candle flame in a windless place. It just doesn't move. It's alive. It's steady. And that's when Arjuna objects. It can't be done. He says you want to make the attention like a candle in a windless place, but the mind is like a hurricane. And he just says it can't be done. And it just can't control the mind. And Krishna says, I understand the problem. The mind is undoubtedly difficult to control, but it can be done. And he says by two things, abhyasa and vairagya. Vairagya means detachment. Because if one is doing things that increase the velocity of the wind, then you're going to have a hard time, since you really should try not to do things that are going to agitate the mind. Like watch cable TV or whatever, maybe if you're serious. You just have to stay away from certain things. And the other is abhyasa, which Prabhupada mentions here in this verse, up from 8th chapter, abhyasa yogina. The word abhyasa means practice. But the root meaning of practice is repetition. Like when you're learning a musical instrument, you just have to do it over and over and over again until you gain some mastery. And it's hard and it's drudgery, and some days you don't feel like it, and you have to do it anyway. That's abhyasa. That's practice. Repetition. And so we have that system. Prabhupada said that we should chant every day 16 rounds on the beads. That's abhyasa. That's practice. So that means, like when one is cultivating the holy name, the idea is still there, controlling the mind. One should try to get the attention, tries to fix the mind, fix the attention by the intelligence, fix the attention on the holy name, on the Hare Krishna mantra. And we have noticed that the mind is stressing away, so goes off this way. Is inattentive, is distracted, wants to do other things. As soon as we notice, if we're practicing, as soon as we notice the mind has gone away, we bring it back. When it wanders off again, we bring it back. When it wanders off again, we bring it back. That is practice. If it just wanders and we just let it go and free associate, I took this professor of mine, My dissertation advisor, when I got into Krishna consciousness, to the temple. So I noticed during the kirtan, he was like clapping and chanting and everything like that. So afterwards, I said to him, I'm talking bird driving, you know. She seemed to really like the chanting. She says, yeah, I got lots of good ideas. It was great. But we can see that actually chanting is somehow or other could let your mind go into free association. They get so many good ideas. I think this is a tendency to be resistant. I think if they're good ideas, you know, they'll come later. Or if you have to stop and write something down, then you know, for anything, keep it. But this is the practice. When we practice like that, that's called chanting on the clearing stage. Because the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the root, the offense is the root of all of them is pramada, or inattentiveness while chanting. And he says there's three kinds of inattentiveness. This is Narayana Chintamani. There's three kinds of inattentiveness. One is falling asleep, not chanting. The other is distraction, thinking of other things. And the third is even if when you're not distracted and not falling asleep, still just not being that interested. There's a kind of lack of intensity or interest. So one has to deal with them. Get enough sleep or whatever. Work hard at bringing the mind back when it wanders. And then, actually, I think if one does this in just my experience, if one does this in a mechanical way, then also feelings will develop. Because you're in contact with Krishna. Because when one is chanting while trying to give up offenses, then although the holy name is not, the true holy name, Shiva Nama, is not apparent, but at least it's Nam Abhasa, the dawning light of the holy name is there. And according to Haridas Thakur, just that Nam Abhasa destroys all sinful reactions and brings one to the platform of mukti, of liberation. When the pure name comes up over the horizon, then the result is prema. So the abhyasa, just by practicing, then there's namabhasa, there's sort of dawning light. When the sun is below the horizon, but the light is in the sky, and the dawning light of the holy name will actually purify us of all kinds of unwanted, dirty things in the heart. So that's the same process then of concentrating your mind by controlling the senses, and relatively easy because you at least for japa, you know, for 16 rounds you need 1.5-2 hours a day. And then gradually, as one concentrates in this way, and gradually one comes to the platform of always chanting Hare Krishna. These yogis who were really serious, I mean, they go off into the Himalayas or someplace like that, and they sit like this and they don't move for years. The breathing is slowed down. They don't have to eat. They barely have to breathe. Lines grow up around them. So that's... These people are like real Olympic athletes of spiritual exercise. But for us, in this busy modern world, by actually cultivating the holy name, it's possible to go through the whole day and do everything pretty much. Most of the time, doesn't require your full attention anyway. And you can always be chanting. You can be chanting. Be chanting Hare Krishna, and that way also be cultivated on, focused on Krishna all the time. Doing this, according to Rupa Goswami, is the essence of all instruction. The saram of the vision. Okay. Anything, comments, questions? Yeah?
Could you kind of explain again why Bhakti Yoga is the same as devotional service?
Why what?
Bhakti Yoga is the same as devotional
service. It's the same as devotional service. I'm not so sure it's exactly the same. Prabhupada certainly, in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita purports, treats them as the same. Of course, but then he calls everything devotional service practically. but Bhakti Yoga means acting in such a way that you're always thinking of Krishna, then that is devotional service. And then Krishna says, of course, in the famous Dadani Bhakti Yoga Kamiya Mamupayan, I give them he used the term Bhakti Yoga. I give them the Bhakti Yoga by which they can attain me. And then he says, because I'm in their hearts, then I, with the jnana deep, the light of knowledge, I illuminate them from within. If yoga means to connect with the Supreme, then Buddhi means by means of intelligence.
I wonder if the going back to the sort of root meaning of awakening helps to get that connection, that idea.
Yeah, Bodhayanti, Parasparama, Buddha also. That's right. Yeah, because it means really to be awake. That's true, it's a good point. It means to be awake or alert. And when you're really alert, then you see Krishna everywhere. Because if we understand who Krishna is, every moment of experience that we have, the content of that is actually Krishna. Prabhupada remarks somewhere that we don't see anything without Krishna seeing it first, we don't hear anything without Krishna's hearing it first, we don't taste anything, and so on. So actually Krishna is there every moment of experience. So we just have to become alert. And when we become more and more alert to what is really there, we find out that Krishna is really there. And so this is always a matter of Parijana Bhava. Called Bhagavatam, direct experience of the Supreme.
So is it correct to say, if I understand you correctly, that you're saying buddhi is a kind of a ability to stand away from and look at your system of categories and your view, kind of a metta?
Well, if you come to the platform of buddhi, yeah. That's one aspect of it. Or that's when you see Buddhi actually in action. It's in action all the time. Because Kapila Dev explains that one function of Buddhi. See, Buddhi has the same relationship to the knowledge acquiring the senses that prana does to the karma indriya, to the working senses. It's the backup, it's the power of those senses. So prana, because of prana, we can move our hands, we can move our legs, and so on. And because of buddhi, our senses actually function. Because one of the functions of buddhi is it allows the senses to ascertain or identify objects when they come into view. In other words, the phenomena of recognition is governed by buddhi. So, and buddhi has to be acting in everybody on some level. Otherwise, they couldn't walk across a room. You wouldn't be able to form any long-term goal-directed activity without Buddhi. So Buddhi functions all the time. I mean, without Buddhi, you'd just be completely deranged, or like a child. Completely mental. But then when you see it actually acting, is when you see these phenomena where somehow or other it happens to people in the course of events, that one whole worldview collapses and is replaced by another. that happens. Religious conversion is one of them. There are other kinds of situations like this, and there are whole categories of perceiving the world could change completely and then turn around. That's when you see Buddha working. And philosophers sometimes get to this point when they want to have knowledge about knowledge, and try to understand it, how these things happen, how knowledge actually works. But you're always in a difficulty when you're trying to understand how knowledge works, but because whatever characteristics it has, you're still using it, so it's really hard to step outside of your system. You have to use various sly means of trying to get a glimpse of what's happening. But if you follow the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, it's said that when Krishna says, "I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness," this is a discussion of his function as Supersoul God by giving the Buddhi to remember. Remembrance means remembrance of Krishna, knowledge of Krishna, and the forgetfulness, I think in Sanskrit is a poganam, which when I looked it up in the dictionary, it's more active than shoving away, it's pushing,
avoiding.
And Prabhupada said that there are so many arguments, there is no God, everything happens by chance, and so on. He says, where do these arguments come from? They come from Krishna. He gives them the intelligence by which they can So when one wants to remember Krishna, then Krishna facilitates the remembrance. And really, bhakti yoga is just sort of proving to Krishna that we're really interested. And then when he's convinced we really want him, then everything is there. But usually we say, "Yeah, I want you, Krishna," but later, not entirely.
Yeah. Just a note on Sushumna. Some years ago, I read there's a kind of standard commentary to Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Mm-hmm. Someone referred to as Vyasa. Mm-hmm. And what always stuck in my mind, and this is in light of the meeting that here can be had, is that if one perfects the process of meditation on Sushumna Kala, then one can understand the universe, the structure.
Oh, that's how we should do it.
Yeah. So, I might try it out.
That's really interesting.
See if it works. Yeah. It's within the series of description. I think it's called Samyama, where you concentrate on a particular part of the body, and you know the famous navel gaze description. If you do that properly and perfect it, then you attain a certain perfection. So the perfection of meditating on the Sushumna Kala is that you understand the structure of the universe, because the Sushumna Kala of the body is connected with the Sushumna of the universe. If you make that connection, you've got to pick it up.
Well, I hope that's a helpful suggestion. There must be some bhakti of a cognate
for that process.
So that's where the term navel gazing
comes
from.
Because they gaze at their navel sometimes. Yes. Yeah. Of course, there's the old hunger nopasana process, where you identify your body parts with the cosmos and think of yourself as the supreme.
I was just noticing that there were many similarities with what you were saying this morning to other Eastern philosophies. And I was in Thailand recently, and I spent a lot of time with Buddhists.
In where?
In Thailand.
Thailand, huh?
And I even noticed that on their temples, they had figures, and I was looking at the figures going, wow, they look a lot like the paintings of the Hare Krishnas, you know. And the Buddhists have a word called Bodhisattva, and I was wondering, is that related to Buddha? Like
just sure. Because the original language of Buddhism was Sanskrit. And Buddha was basically a Hindu heretic, you might say. He was raised in the context of Vedic culture, and for various reasons separated himself off. For good reasons at the time. And so he took over so many things with him. Conceptual things. So just his very name, Buddha, it means one who's awake or one who's enlightened. And it comes from the same word. And then Bodhisattva refers to a certain kind of a Buddha figure, a Buddha in the making future. I believe, is that right? You're probably teaching Buddhism.
Well, I came across four different definitions. They all have to do with, basically Buddha in the making, but depending whether you're looking at that sort of Theravada spin,
or different
Mahayana
spin. The Bodhisattva is also one who is eligible for enlightenment, but it was postponed it in order to come back and save others.
That's more Mahayana.
Huh? That's the Mahayana Bodhisattva, yes. Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Shri Prabhupada, if you...
Yeah.